Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of year again.
Fall time is here.
No, no, not fall time, but Knife Fest at Bertarelli Cutlery. September 15th through 17th, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. 30 to 70% off everything in the store. That's pocket knives, honey knives, kitchen knives, cook's tools, and accessories. You can't miss this once-a-year event. So chop, chop, cheeky, and get on down to Knife Fest September 15th through 17th. Come shop Bertarelli Cutlery at 1927 Marconi on the Hill. Bertarelli Cutlery, where there is never a dull moment.
This is the Hollywood Casino now. Back to Frank Cusimano from the McBride & Son Home Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
You know the bed feels warmer sleeping here alone. You know I'm
welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box, CBS Sports Radio 920, InsideSTL.com. Frank Cusimano with you till 12. We'll talk some hardcore baseball with Derek Gould coming up in about 30 minutes from the Post-Dispatch. But right now, I want to welcome to the program J.R. Beersmith. He is a documentarian from the St. Louis area who has a tremendous documentary about to come out, Men in the Arena. And one of the subjects, one of his two subjects, is a young man that's playing soccer at St. Louis University. His name is Sadiq Mohammed, and he's from Somalia. JR, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Right off the bat, how does a guy from St. Louis who's living in L.A. end up doing a story, a documentary, about a soccer player in Somalia? How does this unfold?
Funny enough, I was moving from New York to L.A., and I was back home in St. Louis visiting family and, you know, packing up the car, because when you live in New York, you don't have a car. So you grab a car in St. Louis, was making way to California, and I heard a story on NPR about a young man who had been publicly amputated inside of a soccer stadium in Mogadishu. And I realized that I hadn't thought about Somalia or heard it in the news other than, you know, terrorism or Captain Phillips hadn't even come out yet with Tom Hanks. And I just realized, man, it's been a long time since I've thought about that, maybe since Black Hawk Down. So I really just kind of spent the next 6 to 8 months really digging in and doing some research and trying to understand how does someone survive there, what's happening there. And they had just had elections. The Al-Shabaab, which is linked to Al-Qaeda, had kind of been pushed out of the main capital city. And I just thought it was a really interesting time to try to look in to see if we could tell a story about a place that only gets kind of like a single story, which is one of, you know, painted with a broad brush of terrorism, yet there's millions of people that are trying to survive there.
Talk about the amputation there. This is a guy that played soccer in Somalia, and he was persecuted?
Like a lot of youth, that's kind of the one activity that you have, is to knock around a soccer ball, you know, in the village or wherever you may live, even in the capital city of Mogadishu. And at the time, Al-Shabaab, which is linked to Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab means the youth, and it had grown out of kind of like a strict Islamic movement there. And this young man had basically told Al-Shabaab, that was in power at the time, I want to get an education, I don't want to join you. And so they do what happens all the time, kind of make a public example of him. And this reporter, who I have the utmost immense respect for at the Toronto Star, wrote the story about the young man kind of saying, you know, I wanted to get my education and look at what happened to me. And the Canadian diaspora like really responded, but he wasn't approved to visit Canada. So he ended up in the Arctic Circle, and she wrote this beautiful story about this young man. And now he's living up in the Arctic Circle. He has some prosthetic limbs. He's surviving and doing well. And I just thought the resilience of a young man like that who's now on Facebook and, you know, shares his story and lets people follow. It was kind of the first window I had into that Somali spirit of resiliency and just kind of fighting through.
So this documentary called Men in the Arena is like an unforgettable story of two Somalia national soccer team friends kind of chasing their dreams. Kind of give us the Cliff Notes version.
Sure. So it's really built around the idea of two young men that play for a national soccer team. So we have USA Soccer, the Canadian national team, the Brazilian national team. Well, all the way at the very bottom of the FIFA rankings is Somalia at 204, 205, 206 out of 209. that are ranked. And we first meet the team, the film opens, we meet them at this annual tournament that the Somali team tries to get to that's in Central and Eastern Africa. And because that's been a failed state for 25 years, it's really hard to assemble a team. You know, you don't have a doctor, you don't have, you know, the smallest injury could knock out any one of the players. And so we really open up the film at this tournament where we meet Sadiq, who's now living in St. Louis, and Saad, who's now living in St. Louis. And at the time, we had no idea what would unfold off camera, but really it's a look at their lives and what's unfolding and following their story. And it just, you know, as we got further and further into the story, I realized that their prominence back home in Somalia, because they have so many soccer fans that, you know, love their, you know, love watching them, like we would a St. Louis Cardinal, you know, pitcher or our favorite athlete, they have a huge following. So they can't protect themselves just that they participate, you know, in a Western documentary like this. And Somalia is making a comeback. I don't want to misconstrue, but it's there's terrorist attacks all the time. Like Al-Shabaab has lost power, so they do what a lot of asymmetric warfare looks like, which is what you just go after, you know, targeted little shots here and there, you know, car bombings, like isolated shootings. And it's really, really difficult in that way. So we knew that Saad and Sadiq would become targets, so we had to get them out. But Sadiq was already here in America. He had got an amazing chance to come to the U.S. for like a trial. We didn't ever have any idea he'd stay in the U.S., but he did. And then Saad, we spent a year off camera trying to work to get him refuge somewhere, and it just so happened that he was allowed to come to the U.S. and ended up in St. Louis, Missouri.
So this young man, Sadiq Muhammad, is actually living with your sister and her husband in the Central West End and playing soccer for St. Louis University. How would you describe his transition to St. Louis in America?
You know what? We did a private screening just for some friends and family when I flew home from L.A., did a private screening way back in April. And we did a Q&A afterwards. And somebody in the audience asked, "Hey, Sadiq, what's your favorite thing about St. Louis?" And he surprises me every time he gives an answer because I always get nervous. I'm like, oh, gosh, what's he going to say? And I have the utmost respect for what he's going to. I just always wonder what it's going to be. And he said, "I think my most fun day is when I went to SLU and I just got to go run with the guys." Like, he just had a day where he got to visit and kind of run around and walk around and visit campus. And for me, that was that solidified that idea of he really wants this college thing. Like, he really wants to do this and he wants to be a student athlete. And I think the adjustment to St. Louis and probably the biggest thing that I hope for the film and why I'm so proud of St. Louis and how the community has responded to Sadiq and Saad, both boys, is that when they come into a room, they cause you to see your own city through a completely different lens. And it's terribly exciting to, like, see your city and go to the St. Louis Zoo, but you're taking them for the first time. And everything just becomes heightened with this, like, wow, we get to live here. We get to live in this place. And the fact that so many people are responding to, frankly, two young men who are refugees, who have been through some really unbelievable, unimaginable stuff, and the reception that they've got and the care. I mean, people call and say, can we give a ride? Lindbergh High School has done the kids in the history class at Lindbergh High School, and one of the teachers did a GoFundMe for Saad, and they've raised $4,000 for him, which is sitting in a bank and is going to allow him to get a car. I mean, like, you just can't ask for a community to kind of respond better to a story than that. Like, it makes you feel like this immense sense of pride.
Give our listening audience a little idea on how brutal it was for either both of them or Sadiq while living in Somalia, or Kenya for Sadiq.
Yeah. So I think it's important for the audience to understand that, you know, when you're born in Somalia, especially any time after 1991 when the war broke and it became a failed state, any family, like we see in Syria now, you know, all the families are fleeing. They're always trying to find a stable place to go. So Sadiq's mother left, and he was actually born in Kenya, whereas the other kid, Saad, was born in this rural village and stayed in Somalia his whole life. But so Sadiq kind of got exposure to Nairobi, which is an evolved city in Kenya. But he really was all – his mother would try to take him back to Mogadishu. That was where their home. That's where their family was. So, you know, at each time he tried to go back to Mogadishu or Somalia or lived in northern, like, Somaliland, or at one point they lived in Ethiopia, you know, he lived in 13 different cities growing up. And along the way, Somalis just are severely persecuted almost everywhere they go because they get this association of terror and war kind of attached to their persona. But, you know, for a kid like Sadiq, he went back when he was 16 to Mogadishu to plot, try and play it in 2012, to try and play in this league that was reforming. And the first night he was there, he got a gun held to his head, and, you know, because his hair was too long. It's like, where'd you come from? What are you doing here? And we still don't know if it was Al-Shabaab or who it was. But there's just incidents like that that happen far too often. And in the middle of, he was only there for 3 months before he got called up to the Somali national team, which is a, you know, a fledgling team of guys that got called up to a team. But when he was playing in this league, he started getting death threats because he went on the radio and was talking about living in Kenya and what he wanted to do. And so, and I don't want to misconstrue what Somali is. Like, it's really trying to come back, but there's always this group, you know, there's this outside faction that can kind of can wage the conversation and push it in a direction that feels really unsafe for a guy like Sadiq. I mean, I know one day their team bus got shot at, his goalkeeper was murdered. There's just, I don't mean to say it in passing, but it's real stuff. But when all of it adds up over a life of 17 years, it just kind of feels like I guess that's traumatic. That's a real thing for an athlete to have to experience all as a teenager.
And because of this documentary, he can never go back home, correct?
Yeah. Well, first of all, he's applying for asylum here in the U.S., and which, you know, wasn't ever the intent. Like, he came to the U.S. to try to play soccer for a year. It just so happened that this was the chain of events that happened. But then Saad, you know, he was actually the highest levels of government got involved and helped with his, you know, with his getting resettled here. But both of them, and because when the documentary comes back, it'll be a long time before they can go back. And it's hard. And, like, I feel really terrible for them because they love their family. They love their friends. And, you know, the ones that are still there, and they love their country, and they want for there to be peace, and they want to go back home someday. But for right now, and that's why I think they're remarkable kids, because that takes a considerable amount of will to say, hey, random white guy from St. Louis, Missouri, that lives in L.A. comes in and says he's going to make a documentary. They don't even know what a documentary is. And to put their kind of trust in me in that way, I think is really, really something special.
You know, when you think of film and Somalia and actor, you think of Barkhad Abdi, who stole the show in Captain Phillips, and he's in your documentary.
Yeah, he's the captain, right? And then I like to say that Saad and Sadiq are the captain now. I mean, the other guy, Faisal Ahmed, that plays the other pirate in the film. At one point, when we were laying out the documentary and trying to figure out how we would handle Saad, because Saad, you know, appears in the film several times, you know, obviously because he's a central figure, but it's all in Somali because he didn't speak English yet. So we were going to have the other pirate, Barkhad Abdi's friend, do the be Saad's voice. So we actually tried that. We went in the studio one day and had one of the pirates like try to translate Saad's words into English, and we ended up not doing it, but. Both of those guys, Faisal and Barkhad Abdi, you know, and Barkhad was nominated for an Oscar for his role in that film. Both of them were beyond, and it was touching for me because they were beyond appreciative of the opportunity to participate in the film, because it's really one of the first kind of Western looks at a film that looks at Somalia and tries to show what it is, which is a place where a lot of people are trying really hard to survive. You know, we try to put a positive light. There's a clip in the film, and I know you saw. I think you saw it, where the boys are in the bus, and we embedded ourselves with the team for 2.5 weeks, and we're riding on the bus, and they just broke out singing the national anthem. And it's just like, and when you see the words translated in English, the love that they have for their country, you realize for a guy like a Barkhad Abdi to see a scene like that, he really feels national pride. So, and then even Mo Farah in the Olympics, you know, we. There's guys like that who are Somalis that are now living in the diaspora and making something of careers. It's those kind of people that were excited to see the film because it does cast a new light on a place that often gets painted with a really broad brush of just being terror.
So you can see Sadiq Mohammed play. Just look at a St. Louis University soccer schedule, and we'll be able to see Men in the Arena as a documentary. When and how?
So it's looking like it's going to be, packaging these things for distribution, and licensing worldwide, whether Netflix ends up picking it up or Amazon. But we know that it'll be across a video on demand, so Amazon, iTunes, and hopefully Netflix, hopefully in January or February. That's what it's looking like.
Good stuff, JR.
And then we're going to do a college road tour, so you can follow us on menintheArena.com, and we'll try to be on the road and hopefully do some public screenings. And we hope to do the St. Louis Film Festival as well, so we'll get back there for that.
MenintheArena.com to follow it. Good stuff. JR, thank you so much for being a part of the program.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, J.R. Beersmith joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. If you want to see kind of a package on this, you go to KSDK.com. We did actually a story on Sadiq's life, not so much about the documentary, but he is amazing. We were talking about a kid who came here, and he graduated from Lyft for Life, but he still didn't have the ACT score. So JR's sister, Jessica, who is a lawyer and a very smart lady, tutored him nonstop for like 8 solid months. You know, when he got here, took the ACT and he got a 13. Then they went from like morning to 8 o'clock at night. And keep in mind, he's learning a new language as we speak. And then he got a 23 on his next ACT. So he's an amazing guy. He speaks 4 different languages. He learned how to speak English by watching soccer on television and listening to coaches, sound bites afterwards. He really is impressive. So go to KSDK.com. You can see, look for Sadiq Mohammed. You can see that story if you're interested. All right. I want to tell you about one place you definitely should be interested in. It's The Edge in Belleville. It's the premier entertainment center in the St. Louis metropolitan area. First of all, they feature the world's largest laser tag arena. And if you haven't played laser tag, you're missing something because it is a lot of fun. They have 2 arcades, 5 movie theaters. 2 of the theaters are movie bistros for adults 21 and over. So they have the leather recliners, the amazing food, cocktail menu. It's a great place for a date night, birthday parties. Boy, we've had some good birthday parties there over the years. So if you get a chance, we recommend a trip to The Edge in Belleville. And while you're over in Illinois, maybe you should order some uniforms from Winning Streak. That's the company run by Chris Brown, and the world headquarters are in Dupo. You don't have to go to Dupo. You can just go to Winning Streak's website, contact them, and then they will come to your practice with a great selection of uniforms. And you just order right there. So go to Winning Streak's website, winningstreak.com. Find out more information about a place that does it all. They come to your place, they fit you, they go back to their place, and then they bring the uniforms back to your place. Winning Streak. We'll take a short time out. Some very interesting things going on with the Cardinals. Derek Gould is next.